Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today's episode is the first of two parts in which ISF CEO Steve Durbin and I will discuss the presentation he gave for Nobel Fest in April 2022. That presentation was The AI Revolution, Democratization, and the Ethical Dilemma of Innovation. And Steve, before we get into the conversation, can you first tell us a bit about Nobel Fest and how you came to present there? What do we need to know about that?
Yeah, I mean, Nobel Fest, Tavia, is pretty unique, I think. It's one of the world's largest not-for-profit educational events, and it brings together, I think, something like about 250,000 participants from over 150 countries all around the world, and is certainly supported by a large number of international universities. And the idea of it is to get together a pretty small number of technology experts and indeed some Nobel laureates, so hence Nobel Fest, to give lectures and talk about a number of different themes. And their mission is to make science and global education accessible in every corner of the world. And so by doing that, you create a much more inclusive environment that hopefully helps students to understand the endless opportunities that actually exist from a technology standpoint, as far as I'm concerned, for new generations. So I got involved with it some years ago now through the work that I do with the Astana Club. And this particular series, as you said, in April earlier this year, was really pulling together some key themes and topics that included large-scale transformation of AI and digitalization. And obviously those are areas that I'm particularly interested in and have spoken about. And they very kindly offered me a slot to deliver a lecture on artificial intelligence, which I did.
That's really interesting. And I want to take one more moment at the outset of our conversation to just make sure that we're clear on how we use the term artificial intelligence, AI. So the ISF defines AI and AI systems as those that are able to learn, to reason, and to act independently of a human programmer. Is there anything that you want to add or anything that's particular to the way you think about AI other than that definition from ISF?
Not really. I mean, I think that is, you know, the definition that I try to stay true to when I talk about artificial intelligence. I think, though, if we drop it down a level, you know, there are two key areas that it's probably worth just touching on here. The first is that there's a clue in the description as far as I'm concerned. So the intelligence is just that, artificial. So it isn't real. And more recently, you know, listeners may have seen discussions in the press about, you know, whether or not AI is sentient. There's a whole discussion around that based on some of the work that Google's been doing. But I've tended always to try to stay true to the ISF definition, because I think that one of the challenges with AI is that it is only ever going to be as good, at the moment anyway, as the amount of information that we, people, or other systems can provide it with. Because it's still a long way off being able to think for itself, being able to act independently. And I think that quite often at the moment, when we get very excited about AI, because there are tremendous amounts of uses that it can be put to, that perhaps we lose sight of some of that, or it's very easy to lose sight of some of that. So I just, you know, emphasize, as I say, the fact it is artificial intelligence, not real intelligence, and it is only as good as the amount of data and information that we can provide it with, because it is learning as it goes.
Thank you. That's good to know as well. Why don't you start by giving us a brief summary of the premise of your presentation to get us started?
Sure. I mean, I think the fundamental premise was that AI can be used, because this was about the democratization of AI, don't forget. So AI can be used to improve the effectiveness of discriminatory measures, such as racial profiling, behavioral prediction, and even determining people's sexual orientation. So all sorts of different topics that are very current at the moment. You know, as the influence and the capabilities of artificial intelligence grow, there is also going to be a need to work on new areas of international ethical standards, because clearly we're going to move into that space very, very quickly. And we probably aren't as advanced in terms of setting some of that regulatory groundwork as perhaps we ought to be.
Well, and setting international ethical standards is a fascinating and fraught topic, and maybe not one we will stay in today, but that is something that gives me pause.
Yeah, I think it's probably something that we should look at covering at some point in the future, because it is, you know, a massive challenge, and it has all sorts of implications across all kinds of industries. And it's not an easy one to crack. You know, we talk very often about things like more standard regulation, so around perhaps crime and the challenges that that has faced. Well, here we are in an entirely different space. And I don't envy the task of some of the regulators who are poring over these sorts of things at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, the title of the talk was The Democratization of AI. It mentions democratization. What does that mean? What are you getting at?
Yeah, well, all artificial intelligence systems currently possess what we would call narrow intelligence, meaning they can perform one type of task very well. AI democratization is the spread of artificial intelligence development to a much wider user base that includes those without specialized knowledge of AI. And why would you want to do that? Well, the basic premise is that the more people have access to the foundational materials, knowledge, tools, data, used to build an AI system, the more innovations that are likely to emerge, resulting in greater efficiency and indeed engagement. The advantage to that is that greater collaboration and a wider variety of data, in theory, can make AI not only much more effective, but more importantly, improve its decision-making and therefore the results it powers to be fairer. However, a system built by someone without appropriate training or controls can introduce discrimination or privacy errors that may not become evident until after its implementation. And that could result in reputational and indeed technical fixed costs for companies.
Do you think that overall we are trending toward more fairness? I know that there's more conversation than ever before about a desire for it, but in your experience, is the pendulum swinging toward fairness and justice?
I think that the challenge when we talk about artificial intelligence is that we have in our hands a very powerful tool that's in its infancy. And we have to make sure that however we use it, we set the ground rules appropriately. And that is the actual challenge. So we know already, and you know, perhaps we'll come on to this later, but we know already that artificial intelligence is being used in a variety of different systems across a variety of different areas in society. And so the issue of fairness, the issue of discrimination, really begins to take on very much more importance than perhaps if we were talking about AI within a very narrow, focused environment. And so, you know, to answer that question, I would say it's probably impossible, because we need to look at all of the different ways in which it's being used, how it's being used, the implementation of it, and the, as I say, the degree of maturity that is associated with that particular application of AI. But I would hope that as we learn more about it and as we use it more widely, that certainly we would be able to address some of those issues, because frankly, we have to.
Yeah. Well, it's such a complicated question. And again, we could have many episodes around these issues, but Tavia Gilbert's definition of fairness may be slightly different than Steve Durbin's. That might be, you know, vastly different from another person's. So the very definition of the word fair is something to discuss.
But that, you see, is the important piece, Tavia. Because from an AI system perspective, the system needs to have all of those different data points. Because if we just provide it with one perspective, that's what it will then learn and that's how it will act. So this was my point about increasing the amount of data that we're sharing with the system so that the systems can get the benefit of this wide diversity of view in order to then better perform in the areas that we want it to be used in.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense, because as AI decisions increasingly influence and impact people's lives at scale, so does the associated responsibility for the enterprise to really wisely manage potential ethical, socio-technical implications of AI adoption.
That's right. I mean, we shouldn't forget that AI models are in fact living organisms. I mean, once built, they're difficult to maintain and train, especially since models are not, and nor indeed should they be, generalizable. And because of their unique nature, introducing new and potentially surprising or perhaps divergent information would require manual input and constant retraining across models. In a global survey of risk managers, 58% identified AI as the biggest potential cause of unintended consequences over the next 2 years. But only 11% say that they are fully capable of assessing risks associated with organization-wide AI adoption. So that really is my point about it being in its infancy at this stage. And what organizations need to do is to tackle what I would see as being a fairly central challenge, and that is translating ethical principles into practical, measurable metrics that work for them. And to embed these into everyday processes, they also need the right organizational, technical, operational, and indeed reputational scaffolding.
So let's talk about how organizations can do that.
Yeah, well, there's a limit to the level of autonomy an organization can give to any AI system. Organizations need, I believe, to balance autonomy with human oversight. Now, I talk very often about AI systems not replacing necessarily the human, but as working together to get the best from both. So organizations, I think, need to set up working groups, a committee or an equivalent body to direct and oversee the management of risk introduced by AI systems, both within the organization and, importantly, in the supply chain. Responsible AI also means that organizations must invest time in fully understanding sources of bias. This leads to better informed resolution strategies that match both the organization and the application. Having the right tools to investigate sources of bias and understand the impacts of fairness in decision making is absolutely critical. Now, leading organizations in the use of AI clearly articulate their responsible business mission. Ongoing measurement, monitoring of key responsible AI metrics ensures that they're managing risk and communicating with transparency. Strong leadership is really important too. You know, we've talked a lot about the role of the leader. But when we look at AI, strong leadership is absolutely pivotal to empower employees and elevate responsible AI as a business imperative. To democratize this way of working, successful organizations recognize the need for new roles and actively upskill, reskill, or hire. Organizations should also nurture cultures that empower individuals to raise concerns over AI systems without stifling innovation. So clear success criteria, incentives, training are all critical requirements in this. And organizations also need to set in place transparent cross-domain governance structures. These build internal confidence and trust in AI technologies by identifying roles, expectations, and indeed accountabilities. And to that end, I recommend creating a cross-domain ethics committee very, very early on. And this can really prove invaluable. So by defining ways of working and authority to govern, they maintain ongoing procedures and enable on-demand responses. And then companies need to both architect and indeed deploy AI models, systems, and platforms that are trustworthy, fair, and explainable by design. Proven qualitative and quantitative techniques for assessing potential risks can really help equip organizations to reach cross-domain consensus on mitigation.
Those are a lot of really helpful recommendations, but I have to say it sounds like a lot. And a lot of what we discuss about best practices, I always think it's a lot. I also understand, as you've pointed out, the stakes are very high. And so even if it is a lot to take on, it doesn't seem like it's really a choice whether or not to do it. AI is inherently a value-neutral tool, and it can be used to enhance anti-discrimination aims, address some of the biases its previous users have perpetrated, or if it's used irresponsibly, it can be used to increase discriminatory measures such as racial profiling or behavioral prediction or sexual orientation identification. And that feels really alarming to me. So I guess what I'm saying is, since it can be used to either perpetuate discrimination or used as a means of tackling discrimination, it's at the very least worthwhile to make an effort to decide which way an enterprise is going to go.
That's right. I mean, as you say, you know, AI is inherently value neutral. It's important for organizations to consider ethics when collecting and analyzing data. But, you know, they don't have to start from zero. So there are companies out there like IBM and Google that have developed responsible anti-discrimination design technical tools, such as IBM's Fairness 360 and Google AI. Eliminating the algorithmic bias involves ensuring that variables are assessed so that any differences caused by sensitive characteristics are cancelled out effectively. Designing algorithms with the expert input, situational knowledge, and awareness of discriminatory historical bias will help ensure this is accounted for. So let me give you an example. Turing researchers have developed a framework based on causal methods, examining how causal relationships between variables are important for determining what's fair or not. This ensures algorithms can be more fair by accounting for social biases and compensating for them effectively through counterfactual fairness.
What is counterfactual fairness? Tell me about that.
It's a technique that runs a model in a counterfactual context where sensitive characteristics such as race, gender, or sexual orientation are changed. It's a really helpful tool for combating some of the data biases present in the use of AI. And many differences in variables can actually be cancelled out through this method. Responsible practices can be established to mitigate bias in the design and deployment of AI. Using a portfolio of technical tools or using third-party audits can also support this goal. Transparency about an algorithm's confidence in its recommendation can help humans validate and or use the results provided. And as I said earlier, AI can be used as a means of tackling discrimination directly. Fact-based conversations about potential human biases can be supported by AI. Procedural checks, which are the main and traditional method of assessing human fairness, can benefit from AI by, for example, running algorithms alongside human decision processes, comparing results and explaining the reasoning behind a model's decision. You know, another example of this is MIT's research initiative on combating systemic racism, which works to develop and use computational tools to help effect structural and normative change in furthering racial equality in many different sectors of society, such as policing, housing, and employment. A more AI-literate society can lead to ethical innovation in this space, as well as the informed use of existing systems by current users.
That's fascinating. And of course, in the United States, we're having a reckoning around systemic racism and our legacy of slavery and discrimination. So it's fascinating to me that this is converging in a real way with technology. And before our conversation today, I never considered that AI might be a tool in allowing us to make some real process in changing that legacy, in moving toward justice and equality and fairness.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think the important point, you know, is that AI is value neutral. So responsible AI requires us to really have thought through the different data that we are using, the different algorithms that we're using, to make sure that we're not creating an AI algorithm that is going to compound the problem, but that we're using it sensibly to address some of the issues that you've just alluded to here. And indeed, as I highlighted, you know, there are a number of different ways in which we can do that. And I think there is a role for organizations in the use of AI. There's a role for regulators in the way that they come to the table and decide how to govern the use of AI. And if we can get all of that all lined up in a transparent fashion, then I think AI has a chance of really being a very valuable tool to help with some of the challenges that we've been discussing.
Well, that's where we'll pick up the discussion next week when we look at the use of AI that is to the detriment of humans. And we'll start with how this technology can actually be used to facilitate digital discrimination and what the response might be. But we'll stop here for today, and I thank you for your time. And it's really nice to have a hopeful note of a tool that might help us change for the better. So thank you for that.
Unusual for our podcasts.
I mean, we don't want to make a habit of it because our brand is despair and doom and gloom. But from time to time, we can sprinkle a little hope in there.
Indeed.
Listeners, there are a lot of practical insights to consider from this episode,
And I'd encourage you to explore the links in our show notes, which include the reports Steve cited in his presentation. And while you're there, take a moment to rate and review our podcast. It'll just take a couple of seconds. We'll be back for the full conversation in a week. In the meantime, is there a topic or question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode? Let us know at securityforum.org, which is also where you can find that catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. Follow us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. Follow our audio feed wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you like the ISF podcast, we'd love it if you'd write us a short review and if you'd rate the podcast. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak, associate producer Katie Flood, mix and master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.